Hi, this is Shannon Storms-Bedore, Real Housewife of Orange County and entrepreneur. When my company, Real for Real, started selling our health products online, we struggled to ship our orders out quickly and without error. But ShipStation's simple dashboard made it easy to manage orders from every marketplace. Plus, with ShipStation, we get up to 84% off USPS and UPS rates. Automate your shipping with ShipStation. Go to ShipStation.com/audio for a free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
Even though I have no idea when the NFL season actually starts, I've got my weeks all mixed up, so don't listen to me. Don't listen to me if you're needing accurate dates or who actually kicks off the season. Now, see, I got that part right. I got the part right about the Lions and the Chiefs. I just didn't get the date right because I was thinking too far ahead or thinking about other things. So, yeah, kind of a mess I am. But it is the hump show, which means we can be a little messy. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, or our Facebook page, you can send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Producer Jay is in charge of deciding how many wedding questions there are, but we are going to do a video version of Ask Amy, which will be your wedding FAQs. I'm getting so many of the same questions, which I appreciate that you care. Thank you for asking. We'll share some of the details as we walk through these next few weeks. But we got to get ready for NFL season, all right? So send your questions for Ask Amy. We're going to do a little more football, sprinkle it in. Also, Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, speaking out for the first time since his health scare, which, according to the reports, was mental health and anxiety related to this merger, this reported merger between the PGA and LIV. We've also got really incredible feat from one American athlete who the last time she was in the news was there for all the wrong reasons. So there's a lot that we want to get to in this edition of the show, plus Ask Amy Anything, which is next hour. So find us on Twitter and Facebook, and our phone number is 855-212-4227. All right, the New England Patriots and the Green Bay Packers, they ended up canceling what was left of their preseason game last Saturday because of an injury to rookie cornerback Isaiah Bolden. He was prone on the field, had to be taken away on a stretcher. They took him to the hospital where he stayed overnight, though he did travel back to New England with his team on Sunday morning. They ended up canceling joint practices with the Titans. We know Isaiah himself was on Twitter and was posting just to let people know that he appreciated the prayers and the concerns. We wanted to ask someone locally about his condition, but also about some of the questions facing New England. Could they be the worst team in the AFC East? We are pleased to welcome longtime Patriots insider Karen Garigian, who is now with Mass Live Sports. And Karen, one of our favorites. What is the latest on Isaiah Bolden in terms of his health and also his status with the team?
Coach Belichick basically has let the media know he's in concussion protocol. You know, that's basically where he's going to be until he passes all the necessary tests. We've talked to different players who've seen him, talked to him, and they all reflect that he's doing well. But again, you know, it's such a scary and frightening incident. And as I said, he still has a little ways to go to get through the league's concussion protocol.
What was your reaction to how the Patriots and the Packers handled the situation on Saturday night?
I thought they actually handled it quite well and quite professionally. Usually, you know, the game goes on, But, you know, maybe perhaps they've learned some lessons over the years, and they've learned a lesson from the DeMar Hamlin situation. You know, obviously this is a preseason game. It wasn't a regular season game. But even more so, it's a preseason game. And I like the fact that Coach Belichick brought in Matthew Slater and asked him for, you know, try to get a feeling for the vibe with the players and how they were doing. Coach LaFleur from the Packers was totally on board with, you know, whatever direction Coach Belichick wanted to go. They checked in with the league, and it was 10 minutes gone in the fourth quarter,
right.
So I think, you know, again, it was a very wise and prudent thing to do. It almost lets you think like they're evolved or something.
It is important, I think, even though it's a completely different situation than DeMar Hamlin, just seeing a teammate in that situation and understanding how much it rattles guys who are on the field. I loved how Matthew raved about Bill Belichick, even though he's played for him a long time, felt like this was one instance in which his leadership really shone through. We've got one preseason game left, cuts obviously to come. What would you say is the biggest question mark about the Patriots as they head toward the season opener?
Oh, this is an easy question, and everyone you ask in New England will say the same thing. It's the offensive line. They haven't even played with the group that anyone has projected to be their starting offensive line. Several of the starters have been out. Most notably, Mike Onwenu, who hasn't participated in training camp at all. He suffered an ankle injury the last game of the season. He had off-season ankle surgery and just hasn't yet been ready to come back, although he was in Green Bay a spectator watching the joint practices. Cole Strange, their starting left guard, got injured a week or two into training camp and hasn't been able to come back. Trent Brown has sort of been in and out and injured and not playing, and he's just back. And basically, they have a revolving door at right tackle. All the improvements to the offense, whether it's with Bill O'Brien now as the offensive coordinator, a renewed and confident Mac Jones, all of that goes out the window if you can't protect them.
Good point. You said a renewed and confident Mac Jones. What does that mean in how he plays?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen even from the early camps and the OTAs, and there's just a different feel around him. There's not this gloom and doom and you know, he was really, I don't know, set back last year, let's say, you know, by having, again, a couple of coaches take over for Josh McDaniels, who led him to one of the best rookie seasons, you know, in the history of the NFL. And then Josh leaves and Coach Belichick decides Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, two coaches who haven't really ever led an offense, are going to take Mac to the next level year two. None of us thought that was going to be a good move. But, you know, you always give Bill Belichick the benefit of the doubt. Unfortunately, us idiots were right, and it was a disaster. Maybe players on the offense, maybe Mac, they were all thinking like us and really didn't give it a chance. But the offense was so vanilla, so pedestrian. There was no complexity to it at all. They were so easy to defend. And now, especially, it's like you watch the practices now. Oh, my God, they run motion. I mean, oh, my God, Mac can audible. I mean, the changes are glaring. And I think, to a man, the players who had to go through all that last year, it's almost like they've been liberated and gotten this new freedom. And there's a confidence they have now with each other and a trust in Bill O'Brien. Just that alone is going to improve them. But as I said, they just might be derailed by a bad offensive line. We'll see.
Karen Garigian is with us here on After Hours. CBS Sports Radio covers the Patriots from Mass Live Sports. And even as you mentioned Bill O'Brien and the change, the shift, what's it like to have him back?
Oh, it's great. You know, it's funny. His nickname is Teapot, and we haven't quite seen him erupt yet on the field. He's so hands-on. He's so involved. And that's not to say he doesn't ream some players out, but, you know, some of his blowouts have been legendary. There's one with Tom Brady he had during a game I think they had to separate the two. So he brings a fire and a passion. The important thing here, Amy, is that the players on offense have all bought in. They've bought into him, what he's preaching, the offense that he wants to run. And, you know, as I said, in that respect, it's like night and day from last year.
What does the addition of Ezekiel Elliott mean for the offense?
He's actually very important, and not as a lead back, but as the number two back. I mean, Ramondre Stevenson is the guy. And, you know, last year it was pretty obvious he wore down toward the end of the season because he was like their every down, every minute back. He was the first and second down back running the ball. He was the third down back catching the ball. It's hard. It wears on your body. And you could tell in the last quarter of the season, you know, he lost his legs. They basically got another back who essentially does what he does, runs like he does, at least Ezekiel in his prime. And Ezekiel can catch the ball coming out of the backfield, just like Ramondre. So they basically got a clone of him. You know, obviously Ezekiel's older, but I still think there's something left in the tank. And, you know, the Patriots, you know, maybe because their offensive line isn't as good and they don't want to have Mac pass 50 times a game, they're going to run. They're going to lead with the run. So it's important to have a couple of competent backs carrying the rock and doing damage.
The last couple of years, there have been some questions about the receiving core, whether it be the wideouts or whether it be the tight ends, and a lot of these moves that Bill Belichick made did not pan out. What do you like about the group that Mac will be throwing to?
One of the things I like is the chip they now have on their shoulder because all of us keep putting them down and saying they're not that good. One of the local reporters, Mike Giardi, in describing them, said they stink, stank, and stunk. And that now seems to be the motto of the receivers. You know, how did we do? Oh, we stink, stank, stunk.
Wow.
And I think that they're out, as I said, nothing like a nice little chip on the shoulder. They're out to show that they're not as bad as we all think they are. But you know what, Amy? They're not bad. They're a good to very good collection of receivers. The problem that we keep pointing out is they just don't have that one bona fide true number one playmaking, causes fear in defenses type of weapon. And, you know, that doesn't mean that their offense is going to stink. It just means that they're a little more limited in what they can do. And they're also a little bit more predictable. Again, if a defense doesn't have to double cover anyone, again, that makes them a little easier to defend.
Karen Garigian is with us from Boston, Patriots columnist for Mass Live Sports. We're getting so close to the start of the NFL season, and Patriots reside in what is, if not the toughest, one of the toughest divisions in football. So Karen, Patriots flying under the radar, it sounds so odd, right? And yet it almost feels like that's what they could be doing this season. What are the expectations for them in the AFC East?
A lot of people think that thanks to Aaron Rodgers' arrival in New York, you know, the Patriots are going to replace the Jets in the basement. Anything can happen. I mean, last year we were predicting everyone in the AFC West was going to be a playoff team. And, what a great division that's
right.
going to be. And look what happened there. That was not a good division. So you have to see it play out. And again, I think the Patriots are a good team, a good to better than good team, better than average team. They're very well coached. They're not going to beat themselves. They will be in games. And again, who knows what Aaron Rodgers will or won't do in New York? Who knows if Tua can stay healthy in Miami? you know, maybe the Bills are more vulnerable than they've been. I think the Patriots will be lurking. You know, a number of things going to have to go their way for them to stay out of the bottom, let's say.
When you look at their schedule, what's notable about it?
It's killer at the start and it's killer at the end. So, and you know, the odd thing, Amy, is that in recent years, the Patriots, it's post Tom Brady mostly, they haven't started out well and they haven't finished well. So if you believe in patterns, then they really aren't going to do well this year.
Oh, no.
yeah, they've been slow starting. But that's kind of been a typical thing. What's been surprising is, you know, Bill Belichick has always preached, you know, you build and build and build so that you're peaking toward the end. I mean, for years and years and years, they were like unbeatable in December or after Thanksgiving. They'd go 5-1, 6-0, always, year after year after year, like clockwork. And now, you know, they've been like 2-3, 2-4, 1-5, and they just haven't closed out well. You know, which is, again, not what we're used to seeing. So they're going to have to fix some things. They're going to have to start out better in the rough half of the schedule, clean up when they can in the middle of the schedule, the teams are supposed to beat, and then not fall flat in their face
right
in the final month.
Is the criticism of Bill Belichick warranted since Tom Brady retired, Karen?
Well, I think, of course, some of it is. I mean, how do you put Matt Patricia and Joe Judge in charge of the offense? I mean, as I said, because of Bill's reputation, some of us are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a firm believer that anyone can coach anything. If you're a good coach, you should be able to coach everything. His problem is not everyone is him. I mean, I think Bill Belichick can probably coach everything on the field. But, you know, especially now when the game revolves all around offense and it's so nuanced. And, and again, to have two guys in charge who are trying to not only figure out how to call plays, but also figure out a new offense that he wanted to have them go to, the Shanahan offense, and then also change the whole offensive line scheme at the same time. And it just blew up in their face. Mm. So you have to question Bill a little bit on that, I would say. Sometimes great people make not so great decisions.
Is this his version of admitting he messed up with that choice?
You know, that's interesting, Amy, because some of us think that Robert Kraft, the Patriots owner, stepped
Ooh.
In and basically insisted on them bringing in Bill O'Brien. So I don't know if that's totally the case, but I think it's tough for Bill to admit he messed up.
Well, that is for sure. We know that just based on who he's been for the last few decades. the McCourtys were a major part of the Patriots defense for years. I know they bring back a lot of veterans. How strong will that unit be this season?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's funny. It's like the Patriots are old school. You know, they're good defense, a running game, a quarterback that doesn't mess, you know, that kind of manages the game. That's what it looks like to us, you know, what they're banking on. The defense was a top 10 defense last year. The problem was they got to – you know, play against a lot of backup and third string quarterbacks. This year, it won't be the case. And they still have to prove it. you know, that they can match up well and defend well Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts and you know, all the terrific quarterbacks and Justin Herbert and all these, you know, Aaron Rodgers that they're going to see this year. So, I think, you know, watching them at practice, it looks like their defense is going to be good. But again, proving it on Sunday against these great quarterbacks, we'll see.
The AFC is certainly full of landmines, and the AFC East looks a whole lot different. All right, you can find Karen Garigian on Twitter at KGUREGIAN, longtime Patriots columnist, Mass Live Sports. Where were you before?
The Boston Herald for 38 years.
Oh, my
Amy.
Gosh. Wow. How's that change?
Yeah, it's like an out-of-body experience, but in a good way.
Same good coverage, though. And as I have discovered over the course of our connection on social media, we have the same birthday, April 7th.
I love it.
Thank you so much for a couple of minutes. Happy football season.
Same to you, Amy. Take care.
Yeah, she was covering the Patriots for the Boston Herald when I was a kid growing up in New England, and it is definitely an honor to have her on the show, and really full circle whenever I have the chance to talk to someone now that I remember then. Karen is great. Gosh, 40 plus years covering the same team on the same beat now for a different outlet. But yeah, a lot of familiarity there and a lot of players that she has outlived, so to speak, in the industry. All right, on Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page, too. Yes, thank you for your correction. Next week is not the start of the NFL season. Next week is Labor Day weekend, and I won't even be here. Actually, it's become a thing with me to take off Labor Day weekend so that I can spend it just away, sleeping, breathing, getting a break before football begins. It's now a thing that I do, and it was this time last year that I met Bob for the first time. Oh, that's nice. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
If you're going to play center, you're part of one of the positions that actively can make other players play better just by being a good communicator and by helping people be in the right position and in the right state of mind before the play or in the meeting room before the game.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Jason Kelce, part of the dynamic duo that is the Kelce brothers, and their podcast and Still Hot to Trot, coming off their appearances, both of them appearing in the Super Bowl last year. And Kelce has decided to play another year with the Philadelphia Eagles on that offensive line. And now actually speaking out even before the next iteration of the New Heights podcast, because he is sorry for his actions and his temper and the way that he was the catalyst for a brawl at practice on Tuesday with the Colts.
We try and keep things civil on the field, and I think for me, I pride myself on being a guy that sustains the emotion and the level of play out there, and I let my emotions get the better of me. That certainly doesn't belong out there on the field, and a little bit ashamed that it got to that level and that I did what I did. So certainly, you know, not happy about that.
Growing up in Philly, watched him play for a long time. A lot of respect for him. Talked to him a little bit after we played him last year. You know, thought the OGs would at least look me in the eye before, you know, but it's all good. I'm going to get a chance to look him in the eye on Thursday, so we can be okay.
Okay. Apparently, Kelce is apologizing because he delivered a cheap shot to Zaire Franklin, kind of a blindside where Franklin didn't see it coming. And you hear Zaire says maybe the OG could look me in the eye. Calls him the OG, so there is some respect there, but also the indication that, hey, I wasn't expecting that from a guy of his reputation or of his caliber. So, yeah, he took a cheap shot. When Franklin didn't see it coming, he hit the turf. So he fell to the ground. And this is what happens with joint practices, right? You've got guys who don't love that it's a little more physical than it needs to be in preseason. We talking about practice. And so they take exception. They don't like that a guy maybe has a little extra juice on a hit, a little extra juice on a block. Or maybe it's not even the two of them one-on-one. It's, hey, don't hit my back like that. You don't need to take a little extra shot or put a little extra mustard on that hit. Why are you going after my quarterback like that? It's those types of moments where players take exception. They feel like this is practice. It's preseason. It's training camp. Stop tackling like we're in the middle of a midseason game.
Who the fuck is that guy?
And so for that reason, Kelsey was ticked at Franklin because he felt like Franklin tackled one of his teammates too hard. And so he then comes up behind him. Franklin doesn't know he's there and he knocks him to the ground. Thus the cheap shot. And right away, boom. It's like paper or cardboard or any type of really dry kindling thrown on a fire. It sparks immediately. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Both sidelines clearing out and guys yelling and pointing and getting into the fray. What you really want is for them to avoid getting injured, which, again, is the reason why guys take exception when they feel like a tackle is too tough or someone gets hit too hard. Hey, don't do that. This is the preseason. What do you, knock it off? You know, you tackled him. You got him. Great. The play stopped. Why are you giving a little extra muscle? You don't need to prove anything here on the field.
Get out of here.
So I appreciate that Jason's taking responsibility for it and is acknowledging that it's his fault. He took a cheap shot and that sparked the brawl. All right. The Colts have bigger things to worry about, like what's going on with Jonathan Taylor. Oh, Shane Steichen, welcome to coaching in the NFL.
I'm aware of, obviously, the reports with JT, but my focus right now is on this football team, these joint practices, and getting these guys ready to play for Thursday night.
In other words, I can't be bothered right now. Could you please take a step back? Poor guy. I actually feel sorry for him because into this he walked. And okay, it's part of the territory. He might as well practice now. At least he doesn't have to answer questions about his quarterback anymore. Now it's just his running back.
I don't like playing this game.
Oh, yeah, the Colts. They have tabbed Anthony Richardson, the rookie, the number 4 overall pick, as their starting QB. Without Jonathan Taylor, it looks a whole lot different in that backfield. The offensive line, it was so rough last year, and that might be putting it mildly. It was expected to be a strong suit for the Colts. Instead, it was the complete opposite, which is why Matt Ryan never had a chance. Now they're going with a rookie quarterback who's extremely mobile. We know he can throw. Is the accuracy going to be there? Can he handle the speed and the pop, 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 bang, bang, bang of the way that you have to make decisions or you have to see what the defense is throwing at you along the offensive line or behind the offensive line and recognize how fast it's all coming at you. I mean, there's a lot to adjust to, but if your O-line leaves you exposed, well, then your integration into the NFL as a pro quarterback can look and feel decidedly different. Yes, he can protect himself by running, but that's clearly not what you want your rookie quarterback to be doing, is to be taking off most of the time. It's a problem in and of itself. Without Jonathan Taylor, without an experienced back to hand off to, it could be worse for Richardson and for the Colts and for Shane Steichen, as a matter of fact. I don't actually think the Colts want to trade him. I think they've made this concession, allowed Taylor's camp to explore trade so that they don't have to do the work anymore. But it still feels to Jonathan like they're allowing him the option. A first-round pick, though, for a guy who is still nursing an ankle injury? Unless Taylor's agents are letting prospective teams know, hey, we were just faking the ankle injury. It wasn't real. We were faking it. Oh, my gosh. Something's got to give, right? At this point, Shane Steichen can't be bothered. All right, coming up, the commissioner of the PGA Tour dropped the bombshell that they were merging with LIV and taking all of the Saudi Arabian money, and then he disappeared. Anxiety, mental health on the line. He took a hiatus, a mini sabbatical, if you will. Well, now he's back, and there's no way to avoid answering questions. Do we have a timeline? What does it mean? What happens as a result of the merger? And was it all just a ploy to get rid of the lawsuits? Jay Monahan on the hot seat. It's coming up. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, A-Law Radio. We're looking for your questions for Ask Amy Anything. And I will retweet here because the bright orange box needs to be front and center on your timeline. We want you to be able to find it easy. So check it out, whether it's my Twitter or your show Twitter. And then also on our Facebook page, I see plenty of you have found Facebook and have shared your frequently asked questions. Jay, have you checked out what's on Facebook?
No, I'm getting there more, but what did I miss?
One listener, well, actually more than one listener, would like to know if there's a possibility the wedding will be streamed live.
Oh. I can't even respond to that.
Here's another one. One guy wants to, like, he wants to ask you every FAQ possible about the wedding and has listed, I think, 8 or 9 questions
okay.
to save for the video version of Ask Amy Anything.
Well, yeah, I'll check those out
store
them.
It's not that I didn't think people would be interested. I guess I'm not really sure why people are so obsessed with seeing my engagement ring. It's personal. It's private. I don't know. Jay, I guess you're a guy, so maybe this isn't a fair question for you. But I don't know why people ever do that in the first place. It seems very pretentious.
Posting like a photo of
a photo of a piece of jewelry? Like, hey, look at my shiny bling.
I gotta say, like, I'm in my early 30s, so I have a bunch of friends who are in that stage of, like, getting married, starting to get married. Whenever I do see, like, a girl I went to high school with or something post the photo of, like, their finger and their hand extend, I gotta say, I'm like, that's a little pretentious. Like, do I care? Like,
no,
you want to post a photo with, like, with your husband or whatever, like, the engagement, fine. But there's ones that are, like, closed up, zoomed
just
in.
Just about,
like,
the ring.
The hand is posed exactly like how they probably took the shot 7 times to get it how she wanted it.
Yeah, it seems so tacky.
A little bit.
It seems so tacky. Although, I did send a photo of the ring, or me with the ring, to family and friends who aren't going to see it until potentially the wedding. That's one thing. And by the way, I want you to know, it was the very first photo. The only photo I took on the night that I got engaged.
I believe you.
I didn't have to take it 7 times. I promise. But it wasn't even my face in it. It was just the ring itself to share with family and friends.
Sending it to family and friends. That's normal.
I feel like it's kind of tacky. Like, hey, look at my ring. It's not about the fact that I'm getting married. It's not about the fact that I finally met the love of my life. It's about the piece of jewelry.
You're right.
That's not my thing.
Yeah, I look at it and I go, that is a little pretentious. I got to say, I agree with you.
And I understand if you're not a public figure and that's how you reach your family and friends, but I don't feel right about that. It feels like a look at me moment. And I don't.
I hear you.
Although he did a really good job with the ring. I'm really proud of him. He did it all by himself.
It's very nice.
All by himself. Some guy said I should check and make sure it's not fake. It's not cubic zirconia. Honestly, I don't even care. If it is, so what?
Who would say that?
People. You know people. It's a symbol. It's not the end all to be all. Okay, but thanks for your questions on our show Twitter or on our Facebook page. Just Jay, have fun with that.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It's a historical day for the PGA Tour and the game of golf. What we're talking about today is coming together to unify the game of golf. We've recognized that together we can have a far greater impact on this game than we can working apart.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Going back to June, it was a bombshell announcement early in that month about how PGA would be merging with its fiercest enemy, its fiercest rival, Although it's kind of funny because, according to Monahan, Liv wasn't really a rival at all, and Liv wouldn't survive, and it was just a wart on the behind of the PGA Tour. Wasn't a legitimate threat, but you know what Liv has? Money. And that's what the PGA Tour needs. It overextended itself. It overpromised. It overcompensated. And according to some reports, really the rumors and the rumblings, PGA is hurting in the financial department. And this move, this merger, even though they don't really have the details ironed out, this merger spared the PGA from going under, which is crazy to think about. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Jay Monahan took some time off because of anxiety. He was certainly in the spotlight. He was criticized royally after announcing this and not really letting any of the membership in on what he was doing behind the scenes, trying to work out this merger. And so as he returns finally from his time away and faces the music, the State of the PGA Tour press conference on Tuesday, one of the first questions asked of him is, how do you convince people this isn't just a sham and it's a real merger and not just meant to get rid of the lawsuits the PGA was facing?
We operate in good faith, and I see that on both sides. And that framework agreement, which is an agreement to reach an agreement, put us in a position to reach an agreement, those safeguards that are in place and our commitment to moving from, you know, the divisive nature of the relationship we had to a productive one, for us to be able to make a fundamental transition to our business with the formation of NewCo, to have an investable entity for PIF to be able to invest in that didn't previously exist, for the PGA Tour to, you know, be in control of the future of men's professional golf, and for us to be partners, if we were going to end the litigation, we would have just announced that we were ending the litigation.
The thing is, you wouldn't have gotten these Liv golfers or Liv overall to end the litigation without promising them something. This was a negotiation. So I can understand the question. Is this how you get rid of the lawsuits? And he says, no, if we were going to do that, we would have just ended it. Except for, I'm not sure he had the option. Maybe this wasn't the only goal of the merger, but it was certainly one of them, to get out from underneath this group of lawsuits. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Well, how, if you're the commissioner of the PGA Tour, do you get the athletes on board? How do you explain to the players, who are obviously frustrated? And if they're not frustrated, they're just completely in the dark about what this merger means.
The way that we're dealing with that is that we're following our governance. And we have six player directors that are on our board. As I just mentioned, we have an advisor in Colin Neville who's advising them. We have an investment bank in Allen & Company. We've had the opportunity to, as Tyler just mentioned, really going back to June 6th to have individual conversations, to have a 2.5-hour player meeting at the Travelers Championship, to have a player meeting in Memphis, to having so many one-on-one conversations where we're talking about the process that we have, the transparency that we're going to be providing, as would always be the case, with our player directors, and letting them know that this is standard.
I have no idea what he just said. I don't have any idea other than he highlights a various number of PGA meetings they've had. But he didn't give any information about the timing or the details. And I suspect that's because they don't actually know. So how do you continue to reassure the athletes that not only do you have their best interest, but you're not going to keep them in the dark?
There isn't a lot that you're going to be able to share, but we continue to reinforce the fact that the framework agreement is ultimately the path that we're on. And when we're able to share more information, we will. But it's also, I think they also understand that with the governance we have in place, you know, we're not going to be able to, you know, it's our job to put forward the best possible construct with PIF for the future.
I love that he calls it PIF. That's my favorite part of all of this. Yeah, he doesn't have so many details. He doesn't have really anything that he can offer other than it's an agreement to come to an agreement, and we'll let people know when we've got the agreement. I mean, that's what he said. There are no hard and fast specifics. There's nothing that he can say to reassure players. It's all a bunch of piffing, and he just hopes the money will speak volumes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.